Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. I am glad to be here, and if you're wondering why our show was a rerun on Friday, it's because I was in a serious accident in which a truck pulled out in front of my car and totaled it, sending me on an ambulance ride to the hospital. So please, listeners, drive carefully and look before you pull out of a side street, and be sure to make a full stop so you don't wind up hurting someone or yourself. I'm still feeling like I went a few rounds in the boxing ring, so we're going to have some news at the top of our hour today, followed by some Best of East County features in the latter part of the show. In top news, we'll tell you about complaints raised by neighbors at Gillespie Field over threats to public safety after the latest in a string of plane crashes into homes and streets, including several involving flight school students. On our Capitol Report, learn how Speaker John Boehner's resignation could impact efforts to forestall a government shutdown. Then on Green Scene, Leon Thompson has news about a controversy involving forest lands and potential housing development proposed near Cleveland National Forest in the Alpine area. On Tribal Beat, learn about a local Native American tribe that wants to turn its former casino into a medical marijuana cultivation facility. You could say they're going from jackpots to pot growing to boost the tribal economy. Hear the latest on the presidential race and who's dropped out. Learn about a new car seat law requiring toddlers to stay in a rear-facing car seat until age 2, and why that's important to protect children's safety. We'll also tell you the inspiring story of a 100-year-old man who set some world records in the Senior Olympics right here in San Diego. Our newsmaker interview today, conducted by Ed Barena, is with Brent Ford, a coach at El Cajon Valley High School, which has produced some big league athletes. He'll be talking about the school's athletic programs and how those are impacting students' lives. And then on Destination East County, Tasha Matthews and Ed Barena will tell you about some big events coming up, including Oktoberfests and much more. Today, we'll be re-airing our interview with Roy Toft, a prominent wildlife photographer who will share his experiences photographing tigers for National Geographic. And in his interview, conducted by Mimi Pollack, he'll also be talking about photo tours that he leads to exotic corners of the world. We'll have an update for you on proposed water rate hikes in the Helix Water District and how some residents are fighting that, as well as a story from Public News Service on the federal government's efforts to protect aquatic animals from fishing nets. So stay tuned for these stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
After a plane crashed into a Santee home on September 3rd, killing the pilot and a flight student near Gillespie Field, Advocates for Safe Airport Policies, or ASAP, is calling for action to protect community members. ASAP has made many complaints to officials before this crash, which is far from the first involving planes at Gillespie. But recently, residents have warned of frequent and low flights over homes due to an increase in flight school training of students at Gillespie Field. Now ASAP is holding a meeting for concerned airport neighbors. The event will be held September 30th at a private home in Fletcher Hills. You can get details on how to RSVP on our website at eastcountymagazine.org. Residents want to file a class action suit. So far, over 50 households have committed to join a lawsuit, says ASAP Representative Sue Strom, but the case attorney consulted by the group wants more plaintiffs before filing the case. ASAP says when families moved near the airport, it was not used as a commercial air academy for multiple air schools, and they're concerned that novices practicing over their homes puts public safety at risk. There have been numerous past crashes and emergency landings involving planes at Gillespie, including several serious accidents linked to the flight schools. Major incidents include the following. In 1997, two small planes collided over El Cajon on approach to Gillespie Field, killing the pilot in one plane and injuring a student pilot and instructor in the other plane, which was owned by Golden State Flying School at Gillespie. In 2006, a mid-air collision killed three people over El Cajon, 3 miles south of Gillespie Field. Two of the three victims were on a training flight from Scandinavian Aviation Academy at Gillespie. In 2008, a Cessna caught fire while landing at Gillespie. The student pilot from a local flight school escaped without injury. In 2009, a Cessna registered to California Flight Academy at Gillespie Field crashed into a utility pole near an Oceanside airport. In 2010, a single-engine plane crashed after takeoff from Gillespie, hitting trolley lines. It landed upside down on the roadways at Cuyamaca Street and Prospect Avenue in Santee, with the pilot sustaining minor injuries. Also in 2010, a Cessna lost power while inbound to Gillespie Field. It crashed onto Johnson Avenue in El Cajon, hitting a power pole and causing a power outage. The plane burst into flames, but the pilot and passenger escaped with only minor injuries. In 2011, an experimental single-engine plane made a hard landing and caught fire at Gillespie Field. In 2012, a small plane took off from Gillespie and, after experiencing engine trouble, made an emergency landing on Highway 67. And in 2013, a Piper Cherokee made an emergency landing on Highways 52 and 125. This is the same plane that crashed into a Santee home on September 3rd of this year, killing the pilot and student. ASAP is encouraging residents to write Supervisor Diane Jacob to ask for more restrictions on flight schools. One resident who asked to have their name withheld has sent a letter to Supervisor Jacob that states, quote, "What if the next touch-and-go crash takes out a school in session? Will elected officials tell grieving parents that's the risk they took by sending their children to a school near Gillespie Field?" Unquote. The Federal Aviation Administration is investigating the cause of the crash. The airport and flight school representatives have previously denied flying too low over homes and insisted that all property safety procedures are followed by pilots and students. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. This is Miriam Raftery with a Capitol Report. Speaker John Boehner, a Republican from Ohio, has announced he will resign from Congress at the end of October, with a September 30th deadline looming to pass a spending bill or force a government shutdown. Boehner has stated on Face the Nation that he expects a continuing resolution will pass for funding at least through the end of the year, averting a shutdown. But after that, all bets are off, since the likely successor to Boehner, Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy of California, is backed by conservative Tea Party forces. Weary of attacks from the conservative wing of the Republican Party pushing for a shutdown of the government and actions that are politically unattainable with a Democratic president and enough Democrats in the Senate to block bills with a filibuster, Boehner stated, "It had become clear to me that this prolonged leadership turmoil would do irreparable harm to the institution." Boehner made his announcement shortly after fulfilling his longtime wish to have Pope Francis address Congress, and he wept openly as the Pope spoke to House members. Later, Boehner warned of false prophets in the party promising things they cannot deliver, an apparent reference to some Republican presidential candidates who have chastised Boehner for not pushing for a shutdown at all costs. Republicans had sought to strip all Planned Parenthood funding from the spending bill, but Democrats blocked that action. Federal funds for Planned Parenthood are used to fund women's health screenings such as mammograms and pap smears, as well as birth control and family planning. No federal funds are allocated for abortions, with rare exceptions, mainly when a mother's life is in danger. Speaker Boehner has said he will hold committee hearings on the controversial Planned Parenthood videos. Speaker Boehner's resignation announcement came as a surprise to many, including President Obama, who praised Boehner for conducting himself with civility and courtesy even when they disagreed. Republican Congressman Paul Ryan of Wisconsin called Boehner's resignation an act of pure selflessness. Some Republicans favored Ryan to take the leadership role, but he has said he does not want the job, the New York Times reports. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, a Democrat from California, learned the news by reading a bulletin on a staffer's phone. She called the action a stark indication of the disarray of House Republicans, adding, "God knows what's next over there."
Another GOP Republican candidate has dropped out of the running to become the next president. Former Wisconsin governor and Republican presidential candidate Scott Walker has confirmed he has indeed removed his name from the field to become president. According to the New York Times, Walker is asking his fellow Republicans to figure out how to make things better for everyone instead of focusing on how bad things are. "I encourage other Republican candidates to consider doing the same," he said, "so that the voters can focus on a limited number of candidates who can offer a positive, conservative alternative to the current frontrunner," an apparent reference to Donald Trump. According to Fox News Channel, Walker's rivals did not seem to believe that he was dropping out. Even some of them seemed shocked by the news. "Holy cow," Senator Ted Cruz said on Fox News. Walker is best known for his union-busting tactics targeting public workers as governor of Wisconsin. The other Republican candidate who has dropped out of the presidential race is former Texas Governor Rick Perry. Both were polling in single digits in national polls when they announced plans to pull out of the race. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is DeVario Bell.
If you're a parent with young children or drive small children in your vehicle, listen up. Governor Jerry Brown has signed Assembly Bill 53 into law. It requires drivers to secure children in rear-facing car seats until at least age 2, unless the child weighs over 40 pounds or is more than 40 inches tall. The American Academy of Pediatrics supports the bill, citing a study that found children younger than 2 years old are 75% less likely to be killed or injured in a car crash if they're in a rear-facing car seat. According to the letter sent by the American Academy of Pediatrics in support of the bill, rear-facing car seats provide optimal support to the head and spine in the event of a crash. An infant younger than 2 years old of age developmentally has a large head in proportion to the rest of his or her body, as well as structural features of their neck and spine that place the infant at particularly high risk of head and spine injuries in motor vehicle crashes. The pediatric group's letter conclude, "We care for these patients and see that catastrophic impact on not only the patient's life, but also the entire family." The National Transportation Safety Administration also advises keeping children in a rear-facing car seat until age 2 or even 3. Yet 75% of parents switch children to seat facing forward too early despite the advice. California is the first state in the nation to make rear-facing seats for children mandatory until age 2. The new California law will take into effect 2017, but parents are encouraged to start keeping kids safe by following the law's guidelines right away. Once a child outgrows an infant seat, there are rear-facing convertible seats that are comfortable and allow for growth. You can learn more at this government website, safercar.gov, and click the parents section for details on car seat safety. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Tasha Matthews.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Leon Thompson with the Green Scene Report. More than two decades ago, San Diego County voters approved the Forest Conservation Lands Initiative. It provided 20 years of environmental protection to properties around Cleveland National Forest, as well as privately owned lots inside the forest, banning major development there in order to keep the forest healthy. But protections for these areas have now expired due to a sunset clause in the initiative, and supervisors refused to renew it. The County Planning Commission has indicated it supports higher residential densities in East Alpine, though some supervisors have raised concerns about fire protection, water, infrastructure, and other issues. A proposed Forest Conservation Initiative Lands General Plan amendment was heard by supervisors last year when supervisors directed staff to work with the Alpine Community Planning Group, the U.S. Forest Service, and property owners to develop boundaries and scope of work for a special study area. That will determine land use densities for lands in and near Cleveland National Forest, east and south of Alpine. Environmentalists, including the Cleveland National Forest Foundation, have voiced concerns that expanded development would put increased pressure on the forest, potentially harming wildlife and habitat. Some residents have also opposed the proposed changes due to concerns over loss of rural character and views. But George Barnett, an Alpine Community Planning Group member who voted for residential expansion in the area, says the supervisor's call for a special study area is both prudent and needed. He believes some 3,000 new residents could be supported, but wants to know more about infrastructure costs and how that would be paid for. The rift in the Alpine community points up a core concern. Barnett concludes that the real issues here are these. What is good planning, and what is in the best interest of the overall Alpine community? This is East County Magazine's Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities.
This is Miriam Raftery with our Tribal Beat Report. The Yaphai Nation of Santa Ysabel has contracted with a county-licensed medical marijuana dispensary to use the tribe's former casino facility to cultivate marijuana for San Diego medical marijuana patients. The tribe announced the deal in an email sent to tribal members, adding that meetings have been held between tribal government officials and the U.S. Attorney's Office, San Diego Sheriff's Office, and District Attorney. Modifications have begun on the former casino, which will be renamed the Santa Ysabel Botanical Enterprise Facility. The tribe's letter states that the leadership is very excited about the new venture, but not everyone in the tribe supports the cannabis cultivation plan. June Sartori, a tribal member who has been at odds with the tribal leadership in the past, admits the venture could bring in significant revenues, but she objects to the tribe growing cannabis for profit while refusing to allow tribal members to grow their own medical cannabis even with a doctor's prescription. The tribe's actions come after the U.S. Justice Department in January issued a policy statement offering guidance to U.S. attorneys on priorities for enforcing marijuana laws on tribal lands. The federal statement appears to allow tribes that wish to grow marijuana for legal purposes to engage in cultivation, provided they don't trigger one of 8 enforcement guidelines, such as distributing marijuana to minors or to criminal enterprises. But the Justice Department statement warns that nothing in the statement precludes investigation or prosecution, so some ambivalence remains as the Indians in Santa Ysabel, as well as some other California tribes, seek to develop a revenue stream that relies not on enticing gamblers with casino jackpots, but instead on supplying medical pot for local marijuana patients.
This is Liz Albert with a remarkable sports report here on KNSJ. The San Diego Senior Olympics is always filled with inspiring athletes, but this year, the game showcased one special man. Don Pellman, a Milwaukee, Wisconsin native and the oldest competitor at this year's games, became the first 100-year-old to clock in at about 27 seconds in the 100-meter dash and the first to clear an official height in the high jump. His other three records came when he broke the discus and shot put record for men in the 100 and over age group and also set a long jump record. Although Pellman only attempted the long jump once, his 5 feet and 10 inches were enough to set a record. He didn't win his heat in the 100-meter dash, but his finish time was 26.99, enough to break the record. He took 2 throws in the next event, the shot put. His first throw came in at 21 feet, 6.25 inches, 3 feet better than the old record. Pellman earned his 4th world record in 3 hours on his 5th event, the high jump, when he cleared the lower height and his second height measured in at 2 feet 11.5 inches on his 3rd attempt. With this milestone, he tied 1935 collegiate track and field athlete Jesse Owens' record for most world records set in one day. His 5th and final record came in the discus. He made 3 throws and finished with a distance of 48 feet, 9 inches.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers.
This is Ed Barrena with East County Magazine, and I'm here in our studio at the East County Wellness Center, and my guest today is Brent Ford, the athletic director at El Cajon Valley High School, and he's here to talk to us a little bit about the sports programs at El Cajon Valley and some of the changes that have been happening. Brent, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ed. Thanks for having me. I'm always excited to pump up El Cajon Valley High School and the sports programs there.
Nice. Yes. We want to get in that spirit now because the school year just started. Tell us a little bit about your CIF wins last year. I know you had a couple of CIF championships.
We did. We had a very successful year last year. We had our first boys basketball championship in the history of the high school. So that was a big thing for us. We won the Division III. Thank you very much. Division III CIF championship. We got to host a state playoff game for CIF playoffs. That was an amazing experience. And in addition, we have the top gymnast in San Diego County, Karina Polito, being coached by Mavi Barrena.
My wife.
There you go. But and we had just a whole slew of amazing athletes that came through our school last year and really took our program to the next level.
Yeah, and we had a very special coach that was coaching Karina as well. I remember that Mauricio Cortez was coaching her, and he actually passed away this last year, which was a shame.
Yeah, so sudden. And you know, it's the irony of it all is you just get the ball rolling and something devastating like this happens. Obviously, the kids are the ones that are the most affected by it, and it's just super tough to deal with it. There's no easy way around it.
Yeah, yeah, that's something that maybe doesn't come up in sports a lot, but every now and then you lose a coach like that, and that could be pretty hard for the students, I imagine.
Let's get right down to it. I believe that a coach is probably the most important person in a student's life in the high school area. Obviously, teachers have that day-to-day interaction. Mm-hmm. But when the rubber meets the road, it's the coaches in a kid's life that really make difference in behavior and study habits and all those kinds of things, because they have that carrot that kids wanted, you know, they want right. to participate in that sport. So they'll jump through any hoops that a coach tells them to do. And, you know, we feel like we've brought on some really, really powerful coaches at El Cajon Valley High School. Things that are, you know, changing in addition to coaching are the programs and the whole feel and culture of the school because of the coaches that we're bringing on.
Right. And that's great. That's great. Tremendous to see that in our local community. And you guys are in the Grossmont Unified High School District, and you pretty much compete with all the other schools in East County. But you said that there's some changes going to be taking place. Why don't you explain some of the changes to the high school athletics program?
Well, a couple of years ago, CIF, which is the organization that governs all high school sports, CIF here in California, and especially the San Diego section, has agreed to go a different direction on how they group divisions and schools. It's more of a competitive balance now, where before they were grouping schools according to the population of the school. Now it's how have you done in the last 5 years? And they'll group schools that are doing really well together and schools that are not doing really well together. And it gives a more competitive balance, allows more schools the opportunity to make playoffs, to win championships, and to compete against schools that have similar abilities.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, trying to beat the supreme team when you're kind of the low team, that's kind of a tall order. Not really the best maybe for some kids' self-esteem, even though you want to rise the challenges. But sometimes I know how it is with, especially in high school athletics, there's a large difference between certain schools' ability levels and their talent pool and things like that.
Absolutely. And I think it's going to even things out and get everybody pointed in the positive direction.
Good. That's good to hear. So we talk a lot about, you know, the football and the baseball, but what are some of the smaller sports that maybe people don't really know about?
Well, I mentioned that we have right now boys water polo going on. That's a special one to me because my son is a water polo player. And in addition to that, girls field hockey is kind of a minor sport, but it's really emerging. Boys and girls cross country is going on right now. But in addition to that, gymnastics, you can look forward to seeing volleyball, wrestling, all the different sports happening this year, aside from the big names like you mentioned, football, basketball, baseball, track. So, yeah, there's a lot of different opportunities for kids to get involved in high school. You don't have to just be part of those major sports.
Right. So someone who maybe isn't the best at running or something might be able to go and play or do wrestling where they learn.
Sure. Or jump in the pool and join the swim team.
Yeah. You know?
So lots of opportunities. And I like that there's still new sports popping up all the time. You know, lacrosse is always growing. I think somebody had mentioned badminton as a sport. I know that there's several schools across the county that have badminton teams. So.
Yeah, my high school did have a badminton, but I was not on the team.
We're still waiting for equestrian to be part of the high school sports.
I was on the surf team, though, at my school.
There you go, surf team. That's another big one.
Found Valley High School out in Orange County, we had the surf team. That was fun. Another question I have for you is, I know a lot of really talented players come out of San Diego. Is there anyone that comes to mind from your programs that maybe has gone on to play professionally in any sport?
Sure. El Cajon Valley High School has been around for 60 years now, and we've had a lot of athletes come through. You may have seen a guy on the NFL Network, Mark Malone. He played professional football for the Pittsburgh Steelers and the San Diego Chargers. He was the quarterback at El Cajon Valley High School once, a blue moon ago.
Nice.
And there's a pitcher that pitched for the Colorado Rockies that recently passed away too. You know, a lot of different people that come through our school not necessarily go on to be famous, but they will play professional sports. And in addition to that, we're really seeing that people are making an impact in our world, and not just in the sports field, but becoming well-rounded human beings and really contributing to our society.
Yeah, I think that sports has a very beneficial impact on youth. Maybe some kids who might struggle in school normally under academic circumstances might find their niche in the sports, and then all of a sudden they're getting A's and stuff like that.
Right, so yeah.
That's what we like to see.
And you're absolutely right. Sports connects kids to school in a way that sometimes they don't find that connection.
Very true.
And we just had a great kid that graduated last year that was our valedictorian. He was the athlete of the year for San Diego County. Speaking of Matt Sheeran, he's back at Dartmouth University now, Ivy League school, and fulfilling his dream back there. And we're glad to see him carrying the El Cajon Valley High School colors.
All right. Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like some good things are happening at El Cajon Valley. I wish you guys the best of luck during the athletic season.
Absolutely. Thanks. And next time we'll have to do this interview in our recording studio that we have there.
That's right. I was going to mention that we were scheduled to record originally over in at the actual school in El Cajon. So tell us a little bit about your recording setup there.
You know what? We opened the recording studio last year as part of the Connect program, which is an after-school program. We have some amazing after-school programs provided by an assets grant, and anything from weightlifting to soccer to recording class to sewing class. There's just you know, 100 different classes that kids can take. So if you're not into sports, we can definitely find you a niche somewhere. The recording studio is state of the art with Pro Tools and all the different bells and whistles. We've got a control room and a music room, and we're really excited. We have a lot of kids coming in and recording different things, whether it be a full band or just a singer, songwriter. So we're looking forward to maybe getting you some new songs over here to showcase for us.
There you go. There you go. Yeah, well, keep it up. Keep up all the stuff there going on at El Cajon Valley. I know you're very involved, and I also know you personally through the music scene because you play bass. And,
absolutely.
And we've seen each other. We've played together.
Played many shows together.
Very cool. Well, thanks for coming in, Brent. And
hey, Ed, thank you for what you do, and I appreciate East County Magazine showcasing our high school.
No problem. Thanks for coming in. We'll see you at the games.
Sounds good.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This is Ed Barena.
And this is Tasha Matthews,
guest hosting this week's edition of Destination East County on KNSJ.
We'll have a preview of coming attractions, including Oktoberfest in El Cajon and La Mesa, Fall Fest at Grossmont Center, and a Fair Trade Fair.
So stay tuned for all of these events and much, much more.
The Grossmont College Afro-Cuban Ensemble will perform a free concert on the campus quad on Wednesday, September 30th from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. The group specializes in performing popular Afro-Cuban and Brazilian musical styles such as the mambo, cha-cha, bossa nova, and samba.
Oktoberfest has been a tradition in La Mesa's downtown village since 1942, drawing over 100,000 attendees in recent years. This year, the La Mesa Village Merchants Association hosts the Oktoberfest on Saturday and Sunday, October 2nd and 3rd from 12 noon to 10 p.m. This year's festival goes back to its roots with a focus on German heritage. The Bavarian Beer Garden Band, Alpine Gemütlichkeit Dancers, and the El Cajon German Band highlight the entertainment. There will be German food, including bratwurst and real German beer, served up at two beer gardens plus vendors. For details, you can visit lmvma.com.
Lamplighters Community Theater in La Mesa continues its season with a mystery. Stage Fright opens on October 9th and runs through November 8th. This eerie tale focuses on a drama critic who is led by an attractive production assistant into a recently discovered 19th century theater. There, he films an interview for a documentary on actor John Wilkes Booth, who once acted on these very boards. But when the critic, notorious for his venomous reviews, downs a glass of drugged wine, he awakens to find himself tied to a Shakespearean throne on the stage of the old theater, besides an actress who is savage in reviews. She plans to carry out an elaborate plot to murder the critic, who destroyed her career, inspiring blood-curdling confessions, all while capturing his most embarrassing revelation on video. For tickets and details, you can visit lamplighterslamesa.com.
The German-American Societies of San Diego will host their traditional Oktoberfest the first two weekends in October on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. That's October 2nd through the 4th and October 9th through the 11th in El Cajon. You can enjoy authentic German food and barbecue, a variety of German pastries, and authentic German music. There are also vendor and craft booths as well as a kids' fun zone. This annual celebration will be located at the German-American Society's headquarters at 1017 South Mollison Avenue in El Cajon. For more information, visit OktoberfestElCajon.com.
A fair trade gift fair will be held in La Mesa at St. Martin of Tours Parish Hall on Sunday, October 11th from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. This free fair will offer handcrafted baskets, jewelry, clothing, accessories, chocolate, coffee, tea, and more. Fair trade certification means artisans and farmers in the poorest areas of the world receive fair, livable wages for their products or ingredients, offering the public socially responsible shopping. In addition, product standards must protect the environment, build economic sustainability, provide opportunities for education and healthcare for families, and protect young children from forced labor.
La Mesa's Chamber of Commerce will present Fall Fest, a new festival to be held October 16th and 17th at Grossmont Center in La Mesa. This event features country and rock and roll musical artists, including Brent Payne, winner of the Best Country Song of the Year award at the Hollywood Music Awards in 2012 for his hit single, Now and Forever. He's nominated again this year for his song, Midnight Prayer. A beer garden, food, and more are also part of the Fall festivities at this event. For more information on Fall Fest, visit lamesachamber.net.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
Welcome. This is Mimi Pollack, host of East County Magazine's Animal Tales. Welcome to Animal Tales. This is Mimi Pollack. I am here today with Ramona wildlife photographer Roy Tuft. Not only is he a renowned photographer with pictures appearing in National Geographic magazine, he also offers guided tours to Africa, Costa Rica, and Alaska. Tuft got his degree as a wildlife biologist, so the focus of these tours is showing you how to photograph indigenous wildlife while having adventures in the wild. Welcome, Roy.
Thanks for having me, Mimi. Happy to be here.
How did you get into wildlife photography?
Well, I was the crazy kid in Poway with the garage full of snakes, right? So right away, everybody knew I loved animals. And so I grew up loving animals, getting out in our local chaparral and watching the hawks and catching snakes and enjoying that. Went on to get a wildlife degree from Cal Poly San Luis Obispo in Northern California and got my first camera as I graduated from college and started taking pictures of what I loved.
What type of camera was it?
It was a Canon AE-1, which was kind of a classic old film camera.
And so the camera inspired you to start taking pictures and combining both the wildlife degree along with the photography?
Yeah, I mean, it's always the animals that were the major interest, and the photography is kind of a stimulus to get you out there, right? And it keeps you out there longer. So it's just kind of a natural thing to want to enjoy your subjects more. You can take images of them and enjoy them when you're back home.
And besides Costa Rica and Alaska, what countries have you been to in Africa, and what other countries have you been to in the world where you've done wildlife photography?
Wow, good question. I've been to, I should count the number of countries I've been to, but in the last 30 years of doing wildlife photography, I've been pretty much all over the world, from Antarctica to Japan and Indonesia and Australia and New Zealand, most of the countries in Africa and Central and South America. So, yeah, I guess it'd be easier to say very few places I haven't been at this point.
And after college, how did you move into becoming more of a professional wildlife photographer?
Well, right after college, I started working at the Wild Animal Park here in San Diego. I guess now it's called the Zufari Park, which is always hard for me to remember. And I was doing the bird show there, and it's kind of a, I think anybody that's been in San Diego for a while knows that bird show. It's been there for 30 years, so I was happy that they asked me to join them there at the bird show. And being at the Wild Animal Park every day, doing my job at the bird show, of course, I'm surrounded by beautiful wildlife, even though it's, you know, it's not really wild, but it gave me an opportunity to get out during breaks and lunch hours with my camera and start taking imagery and work on it and get better at it. And so that really got me going and into wildlife photography.
And how did you get connected to National Geographic magazine?
One of my last years working at the park, we had a National Geographic photographer come to the park doing a story on new zoos. And his name was Michael Nick Nichols, really a world-renowned photographer who's done dozens and dozens of stories for National Geographic. Well, everybody at the park knew I was into photography pretty heavily at that point, so they asked Nick if he needed an assistant, and I helped him on that new zoos project. So that kind of got me, you know, a little bit in working with National Geographic, and a couple years later, I went and did a two-year project with Nick on tigers that we spent 2 years photographing wild tigers, and that was kind of the start of my career and a wonderful, you know, mentorship for me to be working with such a well-known and terrific photographer as Nick.
Okay. Tell me more about those 2 years photographing tigers. For example, what exactly did you do while you were there? How did you help Nick? And do you have any memorable moment or story that you can tell us from those years?
Sure. Yeah. So we were working in India, which has the largest population of tigers. And a big part of the story, of course, is doing a natural history portion of the project. So we spent over 2 years photographing a female tiger raising cubs. And so we basically go out every day at 4:30 in the morning on elephant back, because that's the easiest and most accessible way to be close to tigers, is to be on top of an animal that they're not really that nervous about. 7 days a week for 3 months per trip to India. So we did three of those for the natural history portion. And we were photographing tigers, and we'd spend about 10 hours a day in the field and only see tigers about every 5 days on average. So it was a lot of time in the field for very little, you know, return, but it was definitely worth it.
But didn't you also do some groundbreaking work with remote cameras?
Yes, Nick was just really pushing the limits with remote cameras in the field, and tigers being a difficult animal to photograph in person and at close range. He set up seven remote cameras in the jungle with my help. And my main job was to keep those remote cameras running 24/7. A remote camera, if you don't know, is a system where there's an infrared beam, and the animal basically breaks that beam and takes his own picture. And that allowed us to take wide angle, very intimate shots of tigers that have never been done before. And that was one of our main ways of getting that kind of unique imagery of tigers while we were there.
That sounds very interesting. I imagine you must have gotten some incredible photographs with the remote cameras. Is there any one particular picture that you remember that comes to mind? Or
yeah, actually, and just for the you know, the listeners at home, if you have kind of that stack of National Geographic magazines on your library wall. It's 1997, December is the cover issue, and one of the pictures in there was a 50-page story, so it was a huge Nat Geo article. One of the pictures, I placed a camera on a vertical dry waterfall, so it's a rock wall, and we had seen a male tiger jump that chasm in the where the water would be running if it was actually wet, and to get to another water source. And so we put this camera, set it up so he's jumping right into a 20 millimeter wide lens, which is a very unique perspective. And that camera was there for 3 months, and we had one picture from that 3 months, and it's in the issue, and it's amazing, you know, a male tiger jumping right into the camera midair. So it's wow. one of those, you know, pictures you'd never get in person. You'd have to kind of use this system of remote cameras, and it's much more common nowadays, but when Nick did it, and we did it for the Tiger Project, it was really revolutionary.
I remember that issue. It was just amazing. Now tell me about a memorable moment.
Another memorable moment with tigers is, as I mentioned earlier, we spent a lot of time in elephants following tigers and photographing them, you know, straight and not with a remote camera. Well, at one time, Nick was on one elephant, I was on another elephant, and we have our mahouts, or our drivers, driving the elephants, and we had this one male tiger named Charger that was in this tall grass, and we backed our elephants into the grass to be able to photograph from a perspective down into the grass, and obviously went too close to the tiger as he was feeling pressured. He came up on the back of Nick's elephant, actually jumped onto the rear of the elephant.
Wow.
Which was exciting for everyone, especially the elephants. So the elephants just started spinning and screaming, and we, you know, Nick and I held on for dear life,
and they rotated fast.
Yes, they just spun, you know, just like tornadoes, and just sent the tiger flying, and it was quite an exciting moment. You know, like most things with wildlife photography, when instances like this happen, you know, it's usually because we do something wrong, and it was obviously our fault. We pushed the, you know, we asked the elephants to get too close to the tiger, and he just did what was natural for a tiger, which is, you know, get out of here. And of course, he did it in a very traumatic fashion.
That was probably scary and exciting at the same time.
Yeah, certainly.
And then after, when you finished with doing the tiger shoot, what was the next project you worked on?
Well, after the tiger project, I came home and rested for a while because that was a long project. I actually did an assignment for Audubon magazine where I went and photographed ocelots in Texas. And it's another cat, a smaller spotted cat. And a lot of people don't know we have ocelots in the United States.
I didn't know that. Ocelots in Texas. What part of Texas?
Yeah, this was in near Laguna Atascosa. So it's way, way south Texas. The majority of ocelots are found in Central and South America. So this is just kind of a small population coming up into Texas.
Are they endangered?
They are endangered. There's only about 50 ocelots left in Texas in the United States. And so, yeah, I was also using remote cameras again to photograph this elusive cat.
And then what was your next big shoot after that?
Wow. Next big shoot after that. I did another project for Audubon on a rainforest photography and birds. So that was another cover story for Audubon magazine.
I remember you told me about wolves, that you did something up in Alaska with wolves.
Yeah, you know, right out of college, as I mentioned, I was a wildlife biology major, and right out of college, I did a wolf population study up in Alaska for the summer. It was, you know, merely a 3-month project putting collars on wolves so we could do a population study. So that was my first time in the field with my new camera, so that was a kind of an exciting time for me.
And then also for, like, I believe it was 3 years, you and your wife opened up a gallery up in Solana Beach on Cedros Avenue, right?
Yeah, we had a beautiful gallery on Cedros in Solana Beach, and it was my wife's idea to kind of show my art to people and be able to have a gallery, and it was fun. We did that and met a lot of local people. It was when we first moved back to San Diego. In the early 2000s, you know, we moved back in 2005.
Where did you live before then?
We were up in the Bay Area for about 8 years, up in Half Moon Bay on the coast south of San Francisco.
But you are a local San Diego boy, right? Where did you grow up?
Yeah, I actually grew up in Poway. So we moved to Poway in 1970. Yeah, I grew up here, went to high school here, went off to college in Northern California, and then we moved around a bit and then came back to kind of the motherland here in Ramona in 2005.
What do you like about living in Ramona?
We love the wilderness experience we have in Ramona. You know, we live on big acreage, which you can still find here in the East County, which is great. And so it's peaceful.
How many acres?
We have 40 acres.
Wow.
Yeah, and nice. It's in kind of the big boulder country up there near Mount Woodson. So it's beautiful. Lots of local wildlife. You know, I don't always have to jump on an airplane to get my camera out and photograph wildlife. In fact, this last week, I've spent every morning in a blind photographing our small indigenous fox, our California gray fox, something that actually I've spent no time photographing fox all my years here. They're kind of a tough animal to see. We often see coyotes a lot more, but this is a little bit smaller canid that is more nocturnal, quite a bit more elusive than coyotes. And they're just beautiful. They have a gray color with a cinnamon rust on the chest and their shoulders. Gorgeous, big, fluffy tail. And this week I was sitting in a blind photographing a den with five kits, and that's what they call young foxes. So what a great, you know, here I am in my backyard. I got my coffee, and I walk across the valley, get in my blind, and photograph beautiful foxes right here in San Diego County.
I know. I've seen the pictures. They're amazing. Now, you mentioned to me earlier that you have a teaching credential and you enjoy working with people. And so you mentioned to me that in the year 2000, you started organizing photographic expeditions where you would take people to different countries and teach them how to photograph wildlife. Tell us more about that.
Sure. Yeah, that's a big part of my business now is leading photographic tours or safaris. And, you know, it's never a better time than now to take photos. You know, the digital era and digital cameras have made it so much more accessible for people. You know, you're not spending a ton of money on film. You know, you're getting instant feedback from these little TV screens. So you can really progress much quicker than the old days with film. And so, you know, people are finding they want to go out instead of going on a typical vacation and going to some beach and sitting on the beach or going golfing, that there's this whole other avenue for vacations. And, you know, you can combine wildlife viewing, traveling, and learning, you know, something new and exciting. And that's what I do in these wildlife tours. You know, I bring people to Africa or Brazil or Alaska for bears or Mexico, and Costa Rica is one of my all-time favorite destinations. It's close and you have a rainforest right there. So it's a wonderful way to get people out in the field and, you know, try out a new camera, or if they're already an experienced photographer, it's wonderful to go with a pro that already gives you, taking you to the best spots and the best lodges. And so that's a big part of my business. In fact, this year I'll be in the field 160 days running my photo tours.
For those of you who just tuned in, this is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, East County Magazine. Now, I want to go into more detail about these trips. For example, what countries do you go to in Africa?
My main country I go to in Africa is Botswana, a lovely country. It's just north of South Africa, so it's in the southern part of the continent. And I've been going there. This will be my 14th year leading tours to Botswana, so obviously I love it. It's spectacular wildlife. Most people perhaps have heard of the Okavango Delta, which is a very well-known area. It's a floodplain and a desert that creates this oasis for wildlife. And so that's my main destination. Although I have to say next week, I'm going to Tanzania in East Africa, leading a photo trip there. So a couple different countries in Africa I go to.
Getting back to Botswana, do some people go there because of the books, the number one ladies detective agency? Do they ever go there and ask you about that? Or?
Yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned that. I mean, people who go to Botswana, of course, have read those books because it's such an interesting series and it's based in Botswana. I don't think it's the reason they go, obviously, because it's really the wildlife that brings them there, but it's a nice connection.
Yeah. And when people go to Africa, they must think that, you know, they're going to be roughing it. Or why don't you tell us, because I remember you mentioned to me that you want people to know that going to Africa is not going to be roughing it, that it's actually going to be a very pleasant experience in terms of lodging and food and how they take care of you. Why don't you tell us more about that?
Yeah, I mean, I get that a lot, Mimi. I get, you know, isn't it dangerous and aren't you afraid going to Africa? And I think so much of the media reports of, you know, they generalize when they're speaking of the entire continent of Africa, when there's, you know, there's epidemics of something going on or a little bit of violence somewhere. It's a huge continent. And, you know, we're going to a place that's very safe. In fact, the most dangerous part of your African safari will be driving to the airport here in Limburg Field. I mean, being in your car statistically is more dangerous than any other part of the trip. And we're taken care of. It's just really amazing the surface level that we get on in our trips to Africa, the lodging, the food, the wine. Yeah, everything is five star. So there's absolutely no roughing it. You know, I have clients that are kind of wonder what big hiking boots they should buy to bring on my trip. And I have to tell them that, you know, I wear Crocs, the most comfortable light slip-on shoe, because we're in vehicles all day. We're not going on death marches. We're not hiking. We're driving around in wonderful vehicles and viewing this wildlife very close and photographing it and then going back for wonderful dinners and wonderful lodging. So it's, you know, it's nothing that you have to worry about roughing it. It's very much a luxury vacation.
I've also heard that the African people themselves are very friendly and very welcoming.
They really are. They are just over the top friendly, just smiles from ear to ear at all times. And so it's a wonderful cultural experience. People that just don't get to travel that much, if it's based on fear, get out there and see some other places around the world, because people are people. And when you go to these communities, they're just so welcoming. And, you know, it's such a joy to see people from around the world and get a different perspective. If you're just always in one location, it's tough to view the world in more than one perspective. So yeah, get out there and travel and see the world and see some beautiful places. That's what I like to do.
Now, what about for the more outdoorsy types, the ones that want to go hiking, the ones that want to have more of an outdoor adventure? What country would you recommend that they take a photographic tour with you, but to where? Like, for somebody who's more of an outdoorsy hiking.
Yeah, if you don't want to be in a vehicle the entire time and you want to get out and physically, you know, hike and enjoy the environment. I actually have several that do that. Costa Rica is a great one. It's close. It's an easy flight. Within 6 hours, you're in prime rainforest and seeing, you know, four species of monkeys and tropical birds, toucans and parrots. It's really mind-boggling, you know, in this day and age. You can just get away for 6-8 hours and you're in this amazing tropical environment. So that's when we definitely get out and hike and experience that rainforest. As I mentioned earlier, I was just in Chile photographing pumas, our mountain lion, same cat. And it's possible there to photograph them on foot. And so we do a lot of hiking in Torres de Peña National Park in Chile. So that's definitely high up. People really want to get their heart rate up and do some hiking along with photography and wildlife viewing, then that's a great destination.
And now what about Alaska? Tell us about your tours to Alaska.
Well, Alaska is another location that's close and easy to get to. And, you know, we have our own Serengeti right here in the United States, and that is Alaska. So there's nothing like the open spaces up there. I've been leading bear trips up there for over 10 years. And so this is a brown bear excursion where we're out, you know, on foot, hiking and photographing the feeding brown bears. They're feeding on salmon in August on the different rivers in Alaska. So it's another thrilling, large carnivore photography adventure. But once again, we're staying on a boat and it's amazing food and, you know, catching our own halibut and king crab and not much roughing it there either. I guess I'm getting older, Mimi, so I don't want to rough it either. So I like to go to destinations that we can, you know, have a nice place to stay and good food and enjoy each other's company and still get out and see wildlife.
Well, you're definitely a people person, so I can see how you would have fun leading these tours. For those of you who just tuned in, this is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, East County Magazine, and this is Mimi Pollack, and I'm talking to wildlife photographer Roy Tuft. Now, what would you say for when you take your people on these tours to Africa, Costa Rica, Alaska, Chile? Tell me two tips to be able to do successful wildlife photography.
Two tips. I think the first thing is patience. When we go out with wildlife, it's not like going to a studio or going to the zoo or where things are just going to perform for you. So I really, you know, I have to set expectations for my clients that we're going to extremely rich areas for wildlife, but there's still an element of being patient. The animals aren't there to please you or entertain you. We're just going in their environment. And obviously I'm taking people to very productive areas where we're going to see some great stuff. But, you know, just be happy to be there. And, you know, and that's my job, is to get you in the right spot at the right time and to have wonderful wilderness experiences.
Nice. Is there a website people can go to find out more information?
Sure. My website is toftphoto.com. So my last name, T-O-F as in Frank, T, photo, photo.com. And, you know, you can get on there. I have lots of different links to photography and wildlife. I actually have a tours and workshops page. So you want to get on there to see where I'm going and what I'm doing, and feel free to shoot me an email.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And if you would like more information about Roy, look for my article that's coming up in East County Magazine. This is Mimi Pollack of Animal Tales. Thank you very much.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is Miriam Raftery with an update on a proposed water rate increase in the Helix Water District. A public hearing will be held on October 7th at 5 p.m. at the Helix Water Board District office in La Mesa, where they will consider implementing a proposed schedule of increases that would raise water rates over the next 5 years. Now, the Grossmont Mount Helix Improvement Association is fighting back. It says increases of up to 70% over 5 years, instead of assessing any rate increase need on an annual basis, is unacceptable, and it is organizing a letter-writing campaign for people in the district to write in. If more than 50% of the ratepayers protest, then the rate increase cannot take effect. In addition, the GMIA is holding a meeting on the issue at Murdoch Elementary School on September 30th. You can get more information on that meeting at the Grossmont Mount Helix Improvement Association website at gmia.org.
The feds put California sword fishermen on notice Monday, warning they'll be banned if they continue to inadvertently catch endangered species, whales, dolphins, and sea turtles, in their nets. The Pacific Fishery Management Council set caps on the number of marine mammals that can be killed as bycatch when fishing boats use the mile-long, 200-foot-tall nets. Ben Enticknap with the nonprofit group Oceana notes the council also committed to putting inspectors or cameras on all gillnet boats by 2018.
This is a really big deal. They're finally stepping up to say that that's not going to be allowed anymore. And if the fishery does catch these species, they're going to shut them down.
Oceana estimates 885 marine mammals have died in gillnets over the past 10 years, trapped with the nets cutting into them and drowned when they can't surface for air. The recommendations must still be approved by the National Marine Fisheries Service, which is expected to implement new regulations before next summer's fishing season. Conservationists would like to see the 20 or so California sword fishing crews operating from San Diego to Monterey switch to less damaging methods to nearby sea life. Enticknap says those include harpoons and deep-set buoy gear.
It's more work to selectively target these swordfish rather than just setting out a mile-long net and then just throwing everything over and keeping the swordfish. But it has to happen to protect our ocean wildlife and have a local, clean, sustainable fishery.
Sword fishing drift gillnets are already illegal in Oregon, Washington, parts of the Atlantic, the Mediterranean, and even Russia. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.